This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Chapel Hill native Michelle Dorrance is revolutionizing tap dance, and the world is watching. Moving across the stage, Michelle leaps, sways, stomps, and everything in between. And it certainly doesn't look like the tap dance that many of us are familiar with. However, it is still firmly rooted in tradition and Michelle's deep study of that art. Michelle Dorrance earned a MacArthur Genius Grant, and she continues to draw international attention and accolades for her choreography. She is a dancer, choreographer, and the founder of the dance company Dorrance Dance, and Michelle Dorrance joins us now. Welcome to The State of Things.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Let's talk about the kind of tap dance you do and the kind of design around it, because I guess, you know, those of us, when we say tap dance, some pictures come to mind. And it's a lot of feet moving and maybe arms going from side to side with perhaps a cane and a top hat. But this is not the kind of dance you do.
That's actually not entirely true. One of my favorite recent choreographies was a duet with a few canes called Cain and Abel.
There you go.
But all that to say, I think our, you know, and I don't want to make any assumptions, but the mass understanding of tap dance is more antiquated and often rooted in a handful of movie musicals that reflect absolutely a beautiful period of the art form, but a not so pretty period of institutionalized racism. So, you know, we see the champions of the form in one corner, but not necessarily all the fabulous hoofers that were there innovating behind the scenes. So, you know, this might not, what we do today might not reflect, you know, one person's, you know, vision of an Ann Miller or Fred Astaire, but that's not to say that that isn't alive inside of our tradition as well.
Well, let's talk more about that tradition. I do want to talk about your dance and what you bring to the art, but let's, now that you mentioned it, let's talk about the tradition and how far back tap goes, and as you say, the difficult tradition and some of the cultural baggage that it carries.
Absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of people know that this is an American art form, but for those who don't, this is one of the original, as far as our immigrated America is concerned, not First Peoples or Native American art forms, but for forced migration and migrated peoples to the United States of America, tap dance is kind of the original dance form. And it was born in a number of different places, but originally on the plantation. The history, oppressive as it may be, necessity was the mother of invention when the drum was taken away from the African-American slave by the slave owners because the drums were used to communicate and organize rebellions. And once this was learned, drums were taken away, which left nothing but literally the body as an instrument in form of subversive communication. So I think it's very powerful that this form was born in that moment. So you have both percussive footwork and something, you know, people refer to as hambone, or back then known as padding juba, that was developing at the time.
And this would be like spoons and bones and other percussive instruments that could also keep polyrhythms.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And what you mentioned is also smaller instruments that are easier to hide. Mm. Yeah, exactly. So that, you know, this idea develops in a really kind of revolutionary way. And I think what's most profound about it is that it finds its way to be this very joyful expression.
Well, talk more about that.
Despite
the circumstances and small right. domestic articles too. So if you've got a couple of spoons, it's okay. Spoons are what we expect people to be hanging around with or on their bodies. Tell me
Absolutely.
More about the evolution then and how it becomes a popular entertainment.
I think, you know, as per a lot of things that were developing inside of that time period, you know, when a more oppressed culture or counterculture is developing something that the popular culture is excited about, then it becomes appropriated or, you know, conversations are had cross-culturally. And that's also where you see that conversation happening between African-Americans and sometimes Irish indentured servants. It's where you see a lot of conversations like that, and I'm saying conversations, and I mean that in a rhythmic way, happening in places like the Five Points neighborhood in New York City as well. There were famous contests back then known as buck and wing contests, because the word tap dance didn't appear in print until after the year 1900. I want to say 1910 or something like that. So buck dancing or buck and wing is what it was known as then. And that's still a style we use and are rooted in today. So needless to say, those contests were happening and cultural exchange was, you know, rampant. You know, the idea of one-upsmanship and, you know, all of this dancing is rooted in improvisation. So there's constant innovation and constant pushing of one another inside of this exchange.
Conversations that were happening in the North, New York City, prior to 1900.
Absolutely.
They had already made their way north. So let's talk now about you and your, obviously you're steeped in the tradition, and this is something that you carry with you as a part of the educational function that you bring with you, but also the artistic and creative side as well. Talk about your beginnings. You started out in Chapel Hill, tap dancing, going to tap dance school, right? Did you?
I did, actually. A school that my mother founded and now has a number of brilliant partners, the Ballet School of Chapel Hill. I think she founded this the year I was born or when I was 1 year old. And I was very lucky to, by the time I was 5, 6, 7 years old, a man named Gene Medler was the tap teacher and was also inspired in seeking out the living masters in their 80s and 90s of our form, our art form. So he was traveling to New York City and studying with the likes of Peg Leg Bates and going to the early tap festivals that gathered the community around the innovators, you know, during the kind of the end of what is known as tap's heyday. So, you know, as it's, you know, being celebrated in the 40s and sort of dying down in the 50s. So Gene Medler was a huge influence, not just on me, but tap education. And Chapel Hill, North Carolina became a hotbed for tap dance. I don't even know if people are aware of that, and because of Gene's passion. And of course, the infectious passion and education that happened in our community.
Yeah, but the education went around that, so that was part of it. So not only did a lot of tap dancers come through there, but they came out pretty well educated about the history of their art form.
Absolutely. And it was thrilling. I mean, we got to learn. We met the Nicholas brothers while they were still alive. Jimmy Slide, Buster Brown, Henry Letang, two of the original Step Brothers, Maceo Anderson and Prince Spencer. Like, we met these fantastic dancers and innovators and generous human beings. I don't know, even know if the Triangle area is aware of the fact that Fayard Nicholas, the older of the two Nicholas brothers, performed in the Carborough Arts Center for the North Carolina Rhythm Tap Festival 1 year. Mm. I mean, these men are just so generous and so, and women as well, but just fewer and further between. You know, they helped instill in us a care for the history because it was their life stories. Mm. So we have those stories, and it's also our privilege to be keepers of this history.
Now, were you any good as a kid?
I was lucky. You know, it's funny. My mom, I was not very good at ballet. Mm-hmm. And but my mom would encourage me by telling me I was always on the music. My father is a soccer coach at Carolina. Okay. And she would say, oh, you have your father's feet and legs. You know, I have flat feet and not very flexible legs. But I guess I had a pretty serious musical aptitude when I was a young person. And that's what I think propelled me so quickly inside of tap dance to, you know, hold on to so much of it. And that to this day, I, you know, if we can share anything with the world, is that this form is both a musical form and a form of movement.
Mm. Anson Dorrance, by the way, for many people will certainly know that name as UNC women's soccer coach, the illustrious Anson Dorrance, your father. Tell us, but you have also innovated. You have great respect for the form, for its history, and yet you're really known as an innovator and someone who's brought it into a very different dimension. How would you describe your style and what it is that you bring to tap dance?
Well, the first thing I would say is I'm one of many of my peers and those, you know, ahead of me and just behind our generation. There are so many exciting different styles developing all at once. I'm just very lucky and very fortunate that we've had a lot of support. And so how would I describe my style? I think first it's musical, but I think what people find unique about it is there's eccentricity inside of it that I like to explore, not just with my own physicality and relationship to the floor and the music, but with each of my individual dancers. So whereas, you know, often you'll see, if you think of a ballet company with a corps de ballet, you want everyone to look almost exactly the same. And in tap dance, I want everyone to sound the same if we're creating something rhythmic that is in unison. But I almost encourage an individual form of stylistic expression. So that might feel unique inside of seeing an ensemble of dancers together executing the same movement, but with a lot of different physical interpretations. But that really just harkens back, like you were saying, to our tradition. There are all these master stylists that we came up underneath. And as a great part of the jazz tradition, tap dance is, you know, a sibling of jazz really coming up in our culture. We were encouraged by our elders to develop our voice as an improvisational dancer. So I love offering my dancers improvisational solos inside of the work, but I also love melding that with these solo and unison or even polyrhythmic choreographic moments where you see us lock in together and can hear us lock in together, but you can also experience a lot of individual styles at once.
And your troupe is also famous for its diversity, not only ethnically, but also body type. You bring a lot of different forms of body and a lot of visual diversity to the stage when you dance. And you say that has an impact because you listen to the soundscape, you listen to a room, you want to hear how those sounds are going to resonate, and that every sound can have a very different or slightly different impact on the ear depending on how the foot lands, the size of the body, the size of the foot, the size of the room. All those things are something that you care deeply about and think deeply about.
Absolutely. In fact, it's funny, one might assume that the, tallest, heaviest dancer is going to be the loudest, when really some of our shortest, smallest dancers are by far the loudest. And I can use Jean Medler as an example of someone who was one of the tallest tap dancers I knew and one of the lightest on his feet. So I also love that. I love exploring that juxtaposition. People's style has more to do with their personality than their actual figure. And I think that's something to offer an audience as well. I mean, we experience this in our lives. We can never judge a book by its cover in any direction. And, our culture is so rich with diversity, we should see that on stage.
You went to New York in the 1990s and toured with that production, that innovative and trash can smashing production, Stomp. In the 90s, what impact did that have on you and your career trajectory?
Well, the truth is I did move to New York in the 90s, but I wasn't a part of Stomp until the 2000s. Uh-huh. I learned so much from that show, from the artists and musicians who performed alongside me in the show and who were also veterans of the show, and as well as the original cast and the creators of the show. That was such a tremendous learning opportunity for how to develop music theatrically, because that's such a great example of a show that's very theatrical, but not a word is said or spoken, mm-hmm. but so much is communicated. And I see, of course, tap dance as a percussive dance form. I feel like we're communicating so much without words as well. And this is the history of dance and performance, dance theater. So all that to say, I think I was really humbled by how much discovery played a part in that show. You can't just bring out a broom and be virtuosic with it immediately. You want to sweep a little bit and introduce the audience to something they know. And then you hear a knock. Oh, the side of the broom creates that sound. That's cool. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, there's another broom that came on stage. And, oh, there's a polyrhythm developing. Oh, my gosh, there's a huge groove, an orchestra of brooms. And then before you know it, they have the broom upright, and you're hearing a totally different sound on the back end of the broom. So, but that kind of development of a musical instrument and something that isn't understood. Nobody grew up playing a broom, and most of our audiences didn't grow up tap dancing necessarily. So introducing an audience to these very sophisticated percussive ideas in a way that helps them relate to it is also one of my goals.
I am talking to tap dancer, choreographer, and MacArthur Fellow Michelle Dorrance today on The State of Things. You can't just pick up a broom and be virtuosic. I'm going to remember that for the rest of my life. That's a brilliant line. You are a MacArthur Fellow. You have won that award several years ago now. And did that change things for you? That was 2015, I believe. Did it change things for you, and how so? And
yes,
if I'm wrong about the year, you can correct me.
No, it was absolutely 2015. I think it was the last time I was in a room like this, talking to someone far away on the radio. The MacArthur Fellowship is such an outrageously humbling honor, and it's terrifying, and to this day is still terrifying. There's a pressure you put on yourself because you are in the company of such brilliant and generous and innovative and, you know, really moving artists, intellectuals, you know, activists. I'm very inspired by the organization and by the number of individuals that, you know, honor its legacy. Simultaneously, there, of course, there's always the, oh, if I could have chosen someone to receive this, it would have been X, Y, or Z in my community. So I can't necessarily accept the MacArthur as an individual. I can only hope to accept it on behalf of the work that our TAP community has been doing. And really, over the past 20 years and 25 years, it's been unbelievable to have been a part of the education I mentioned before, when, you know, these elders of ours, most of them who have now passed, were alive, and the work that every single one of these artists have done over the course of time is the reason that we are where we are with this art form now, and galvanizing the attention of media and dance presenters and artists throughout the world. So I, you know, that's the way I can relate to it, because it is such a kind of an outrageous honor and you know, entity unto itself, and so shrouded in mystery. And still to this day, I mean, I have a relationship with the organization, but it does still seem like a very, you know, sacred and secret thing, that, you know, what I hope to accomplish here in New York is to have a building that the TAP community, and I mean the community, owns. No more losing our leases, no more, you know, scrounging for rehearsal space. There is not a building that the TAP community owns in New York City, and that, if that is the end of the goal for this MacArthur grant, then that would, you know, that'll be a happy day.
Well, good luck with that, and thank you for sharing your sacred secret with us in Memorial Hall this coming Monday and Tuesday, and then again in Asheville at the Diana Wortham Theater on Thursday. And thanks for talking with us, Michelle Dorrance. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Michelle Dorrance is a dancer, choreographer, and the founder of the dance company Dorrance Dance. Dorrance Dance performs at Memorial Hall in Chapel Hill Monday and Tuesday, and then on Thursday and Friday, they're going to be at Asheville's Diana Wortham Theater, and we've got the info at our website, stateofthings.org.